Turn with me to Philippians chapter 4, would you please? Philippians 4. And we'll speak for a few moments this evening on contentment in a prison cell. Contentment in a prison cell. Philippians 4, in just a moment we'll read starting in verse 10. Philippians 4, verse 10. The way our society is, it's difficult for people in our world to experience contentment. We're a chaotic world, is the only way I could describe it. Our culture is so filled with themselves, so filled with self, and so controlled by desires that are always shifting and ever-changing, and we've become the product of a world of marketing, that as I was preparing this, I asked myself this question: Where would you even go to see the living example of contentment? Would you go to a poverty-stricken area? Would you go there where you don't have anything and you don't want anything? And is that where you would find contentment? Would you go to the wealthy side of town, where if you want it, you buy it, where you have everything that you want? Is that where you would find the living illustration of contentment? And then I thought of this. I know where we could go. And we would go to a city. The city would be Rome. And we'd walk down a broad avenue. And just ahead of us, we would see that incredible Colosseum. And we might even hear the cheers, because, I mean, might be as many as 30,000 people attending a spectacle that day. And a gladiator may have just killed a Christian, or maybe the lions just ripped apart a family of believers, and at the sight of the gore and the blood, boy, there's a great cheer that goes up. Just up the hill from where we'd be walking, we might hear another raucous cheer, because just up to our right would be the great Circus Maximus, and maybe they've just had another chariot race there, and boy, it was exciting as it came into its end and Ben-Hur won. As we were walking down this avenue and coming to this place where we were going to view contentment, if we could look back over our left shoulder, we would see a huge forum. And in that forum, if it was available in Rome, you could go buy it there. And there were stalls where the merchants would sell their goods, and there was not just things to buy, there were things to hear, there were things to do. I guess if you really wanted to see contentment, you'd go watch the spectacle, the games, or you'd go over to the forum and you'd buy what you want and eat what you want and see what you wanted, but that's not where we're going. As a matter of fact, we're going into a building built of stone, guards outside. And we're winding down a set of steps into what is called the rat hole. It's dark, it's damp, and we're walking hunched over because nobody can fully stand up in this place. And as we walk down cell after cell after cell, iron door after iron door, we finally come to a place and we stop and we ask permission to go in, and when we go in, there's an old man sitting there. He's an old man. He's got a little candle, and I guess he's such an important and dangerous prisoner that there's actually two guards in his room, in his cell. A filthy place. It smells. It's damp. They've allowed him to have one little candle, and there he is with his parchments. Wow, he's got things to read, and I see him bent over writing something, and I notice that he's just struggling to see what he's writing, and I don't know, maybe in this dark light, maybe he's got cataracts. To be honest with you, he looks kind of sickly. He's certainly not the picture of health, and he's certainly not the picture of wealth. It appears to me that he's just a broken down guy, probably here because he's in debtor's prison. And then I bend down, and I'm curious, and I want to see what he's writing. And I'm amazed when I read these words. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. And then it dawns on me. I'm standing in the Mamertine prison. And I'm watching the aged Apostle Paul. No doubt days or weeks before he will be taken outside the city limits, 3 miles outside of Rome, and be beheaded. And I am seeing this old man straining to see. He's lost his freedom. He looks so bad, and yet he's writing, I rejoice. And not only do I rejoice, I have learned. He goes on, I've learned, if you will, how to be content. And it doesn't matter if I were back in Jerusalem enjoying the company of all those who I called friend, or if I'm sitting here seemingly forsaken and in this horrible place, I'm content. I'm satisfied with where God has me. Webster says that content means the state of being satisfied. How can you be sitting in the Mamertine prison in the first century and say, I'm okay with that? I'm satisfied. Would you be satisfied? When you heard all the buying and selling over at the Forum, when you heard those who were enjoying the spectacle at the Colosseum or the Circus Maximus, could you say, I'm satisfied to be in this little cell facing, no doubt, my death? Paul can say it. I want you to notice several reasons why. Number one, contentment is not a personality trait. It's a pursuit. Learning to be satisfied with where you are is not because you are who you are. It's because you've learned how to be. Evidently, Paul had been in prison for a while before the church at Philippi found out that he was in jail, or maybe before they were able to help. But now they had found out, and they purposed to help him. And Epaphroditus has come, and he has made the journey from Philippi to Rome, and he is meeting with Paul and trying to supply the needs that Paul has in that horrible place. But I want you to notice what Paul says in verse 11, because it's key. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned. I've learned to be satisfied independently of the circumstances I find myself in. I'm not where I want to be. I don't have the job I'd like to have. I don't have the security that I want. My health isn't where I'd like it to be. My relationship isn't everything I dreamed it would be. I could go on and on and on and name 1,000 different circumstances where we don't have it like we'd like to be. But Paul says from the Mamertine prison, I've learned how to be satisfied with wherever God allows me to be. You see, contentment is a course to be studied. It's a discipline to be pursued. There are 2 great hindrances to our learning the discipline of contentment or satisfaction. Number one is our pride. When we live thinking we deserve better circumstances, we will find it incredibly difficult to be content. When our life is about what we would like to have, where we would like to be, what we would like to be called, what we would like our job to be, the things we would like to have, when it's about how I perceive that my life should go, friend, there's a good chance you're not going to be content. when we live thinking we deserve the circumstances of our own choosing, we find it difficult to be satisfied with what we have in life. I'm going to use a second word, and I'm going to have to explain it a little bit. And I'd ask you to keep your place in Philippians, but turn back to Proverbs chapter 6 as well. Proverbs chapter 6. And I'm going to use the Bible word, but we're going to describe it in a different way from what we think today. I want you to notice in Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 34. We're talking about what robs us of contentment. Number one, pride. I think I deserve something better. Here's number two. We're going to call it jealousy. For jealousy is the rage of a man. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. Now, notice the explanation. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. If you're filled with what the Bible calls jealousy, it's impossible for you to be content, because no matter what you receive, you want something else or you want something more. I believe we might call this greed, maybe even envy. The Bible calls it jealousy. And no matter what you're given and no matter what you have, it is never enough. Jealousy or greed or envy is wrapping your arms around what you have and selfishly hoarding it. And a person who thinks they deserve more and wants more and wants what others have can never truly be content. No matter what they have, no matter how much they're given, no matter how much they earn, there's always something else that they want. I think it was Mr. Rockefeller that said, "How much money is enough?" And he said, "Always $1 more. Always $1 more." And so I'm saying that contentment is a behavior that we've got to learn. We've got to remove the pride and say, "I don't deserve certain circumstances. I accept what God has allowed into my life." I wish I had an hour to park here. Most of the discontent that I deal with in my own life and then try to counsel in the lives of others is in the heart of those who think they deserve better. They think they're being cheated, or they feel like God has not blessed them to the degree that they want to be blessed or deserve to be blessed. And so they live wondering why others are blessed more or in the way they are, and they also live wondering why God doesn't bless them more. I would suggest to you that God is blessing us in a great way. Secondly, contentment is not destroyed by a change in circumstances. Look at verse 12. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Most of us have the idea that if we got a certain thing or got it just right, then we would be content. If I just lived in this place, if I had this house, every once in a while, I know this is sinful. I know this is sinful, but I'm very transparent. My wife and I'll be riding in the car, and the lottery will be $170 million. And I'll say to her, "Why don't you run in and buy a lottery ticket? I can't do it because I got convictions, but you go on in. The church will be forgiving of you. You're just weak, and you know, just go do that." And can I tell you something? I don't know if this is true, but if I bought a lottery ticket, I'd win, okay? Because then I'd have to explain it. But then we decide, no, our conviction is going to stand. We're not going to buy a lottery ticket. But then we go to this phase of the game. What would you do with that money? Now, we start off by saying, well, if the lottery is $170 million, that means we'd get about $10 million after taxes. Well, you might get $80 million after taxes. What's the use? I wouldn't even bother buying the ticket then. $80 million. I guarantee you this. Heritage Baptist Church is not only paid off, it's sold and we're relocated. Three elevators. And then we have a house on a lake, a house on the mountains, and a brand new boat. Our kids have houses. Even people we like in church have houses and mortgages paid off. And it's just fun. And we just, you know, what we really realize is who we like and who we don't like, because you're not on this. Oh, if we just had that much, if we just lived in that place, if we just had that job, if this was just different in my life. And you know, we can go on and on and on. And can I tell you what I've learned over the years? If you change a circumstance without changing a heart, you don't change a life. If you change a circumstance without changing a heart, you don't change a life. And sometimes we tell ourselves, if I just had it like I wanted it, then I'd be content. But in truth, life is like a yo-yo. It goes up, it goes down and up. I get those two confused all the time. Down and up, down and up. I tell people life is like a wheel. It goes round and round, and sometimes you're down in the rut of the road, but then sometimes you're up here on a high and it just goes round and round. And Paul says there are times when I'm up on the top of that thing. There are times when I've got the beautiful view and I've got clean air, and man, it's just great. And in those moments, I've learned how to be satisfied. He said there are other times when, man, my life is in the rut. I mean, I can't see beyond where I am. I don't have clean air. It just seems like people are grinding me into the road. It just seems like it is the worst that it can possibly be. And then Paul says, I've learned how to be satisfied there too. That's amazing, isn't it? If you don't get anything else out of this message, you get this. Your circumstances have nothing to do with contentment in your heart. You could have it all how you want it, but if you don't get your heart changed, you'll be just as discontented at the top of that wagon wheel as you were when you were down in the rut. You'll just find something else to need, something else to want. And Paul said, I've learned how to be content when I'm abased, literally brought low or humble. You think about Paul. Paul was, I think we could probably say, legally blind. When Epaphroditus came to him, Paul no doubt lacked food and proper clothing for that cold and that damp cell. He was an independent kind of guy, and he was a people person, and he was a guy who lived his life on the move. Wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, he's always going somewhere, always facing some adventure, always facing some new group of people, some challenge that he was going to win. And now he is in a cell that is probably no bigger than 10 by 10, if that large. You talk about a guy who has lost everything that was important to him. And he still says, how many of you think he's telling the truth? I've learned how to be content. I can be content in this jail cell. I can serve the Lord in this jail cell. I can serve the Lord when I'm going to the next city to start the next church. I've learned how to be content. I might also add that he was dependent upon the provision of others, but he had learned how to be content. He also knew how to be satisfied when he was abounding. Literally, when he was in times when it was just overflowing. Talk about a guy who knew feast and famine. It was Paul. And Paul had decided that when he was in famine, he wasn't going to look for pity. He was simply going to be satisfied with those circumstances. And when he was abounding, he wasn't going to become full of himself. He was simply going to be content and satisfied with those circumstances. There's a great lesson that each and every one of us need to learn, because life goes up and life goes down. Here's number three. True contentment is built with the Lord Jesus. True contentment is in the Lord. That's why some people miss it. It's not about circumstances. It's not when you're up or when you're down. It's about a matter of the heart. And true contentment there then is dependent upon us knowing the Lord and walking with the Lord. Look at verse 13. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. What's the context of that verse? The context of that verse is that when life is difficult, when I have lost my eyesight, when I am dependent upon the provision of people who care about me, when I no longer have the independence that I love, when I no longer have the ability to go to this city and that city and challenge these people and those people, and when life is down to so difficult, I'm cold and I can't get warm. Paul says, in those times, Christ strengthens me. And my contentment is not built on my ministry. My contentment is not built on my health and my eyesight. My contentment is not built on my vigor and my ability to travel and my ability to do my career or be challenged and have victories. My contentment is in Jesus Christ. And in Jesus Christ, wherever I am and in whatever circumstances, He strengthens me. Where is your strength? Where is my strength? You ever face, don't read wrong what I'm saying. My wife and I are at the age where we talk about what happens after. What happens after dinner? What happens after I'm not the preacher at Heritage Baptist Church? I don't know how to act if I'm not the preacher at Heritage Baptist Church. I've had men say to me, "Don't ever retire, preacher. You'll hate it." That's not my impression right now, but maybe it's true. Is my contentment in being pastor? Do you follow what I'm saying? Am I a happy guy because I get to preach? Please assure you, I love to preach. Am I a happy guy because I have a big staff? Am I a happy guy because we have a big budget? And you know what comes with a big budget? I'm very popular. I mean, I'm invited onto boards. I'm invited to meetings. I'm invited to give my wisdom concerning this. I wonder when I don't have a $3 million budget if anybody will want my opinion. Am I content because of my position? Am I content because of my person? Am I content because I get to do what I love to do? If you take it away, am I not satisfied? I'm not trying to be silly, folks. I'm just asking you this question. What is your satisfaction? Hey, are your kids your satisfaction? Well, I just lose myself in raising my kids. That's my mission, preacher. That's my ministry. Oh, then, what if it were taken away? Did you know your kids will grow up? Newsflash. They're going to leave you. Will Christ be enough? Preacher, I've wanted to be a Marine officer. I've wanted to be an Air Force officer. I've wanted to be a Navy commander. Is that what your contentment is? Is that what makes you satisfied? Or is Christ? You see, Paul could be a mover and a shaker, but he could also sit in a jail cell and have no influence with anybody, or so it appeared. I think, now you do realize what I said at the beginning of this message, he's writing this book in the jail cell. By every outward view of his circumstance, oh man, he's lost it all. Man, he was once a mover and a shaker. They've got him in a jail cell up there in Rome between two Roman soldiers. He's not even allowed to leave, and it's barely you're allowed to go in. You talk about a life that's lost it, man. And yet, because his contentment was in Christ, and because he continued to serve Christ, and because he continued to be led of Christ, and because he didn't get depressed when he lost his circumstance and he lost the things and he lost his independence, because his contentment was to be where the Lord wanted him to be and to do what the Lord wanted him to do, he shook a world with a letter to a little 50-member congregation in Philippi. Do you get that? Because he didn't become bitter. He didn't become dissatisfied. He didn't become sour and cynical. He said, hey, the Lord's got me in prison. Woohoo! Can I at least get a candle? Would you mind if I just had my parchments? Hey, would you mind a quill and a little bit of ink? And he was satisfied. And in his satisfaction, he shook the world. Contentment doesn't begin in a nice home or a fat bank account or on a tropical paradise or even in a great marriage. Contentment begins at the foot of the cross, where we are willing to be anything that the Lord wants us to be, and wherever He puts us, we understand that He is our strength. The Samaritan woman lived a life of excess. Yet Jesus says to her, you'll still be thirsty if you keep drinking your life. But if you take me, if you drink the water that I offer, if you drink from the well of salvation, you will never thirst again. If we continue to live our lives having to have our life the way we want our life, having to have what we think is necessary for our life, we will always be thirsty. But if we will understand the water that Jesus Christ offers and making Him our source of contentment, we will never thirst again. Are you a content person? How do you respond to life's yo-yo? How do you respond to need? How do you do without affluence? Do you complain before God? Is your heart constantly filled with gratitude or with want? Take a look at Paul in that prison cell, and you will see a grateful, satisfied man who had learned how to be content. I'll end with this. What did he learn? He learned that Jesus satisfies. That Jesus satisfies. What's that mean, preacher? Read my Bible more? Well, yeah, it does mean that. What's that mean, preacher? Jesus satisfies. How do I figure that out? An acceptance of His will for your life. A searching for and an acceptance of His will for your life. And rejoicing with whatever circumstances He allows into your life. Because this, in whatever circumstance we find ourselves, Jesus is enough. Jesus is enough. Whether I'm the pastor of this church or whether I'm the chaplain in the rest home where Nancy and I reside, Jesus is enough. Whether I live in Four Seasons, whether I never have a house on a lake, say, preacher, is that your selfish desire? Yes. I can be satisfied without that. If I am where Jesus wants me to be, doing what Jesus wants me to do, being what Jesus wants me to be. But you've got to learn that contentment. You ever chase something in your life? One of the One of the things that God has used in my life is that I was not saved as a child. And as a fool, I pursued things in my life. You know my testimony. I told my wife I was going to be a lawyer. I told my wife I was going to be a doctor, a cowboy, a fireman, a garbage man, and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And I pursued and pursued and pursued and pursued. And I wasn't an evil person. I wasn't a drug addict or a drunkard or things like that. What I was a man who thought that contentment and fulfillment and satisfaction was always in something other than the Lord. And then I got saved. You know what I found out? Nothing else satisfies. Nothing else satisfies. You can be a 3-star in the Marine Corps and be as unhappy and as unsatisfied as anybody on earth. You can live in the biggest and best community in the biggest and best house and be as unsatisfied as anyone on the earth. By the way, you can have nothing and be unsatisfied and cynical and unhappy. But the converse of that is you can have Jesus and live in a mud hut and be incredibly happy and satisfied if you learn. Now, what I was going to say is I learned in each of those failures that there wasn't happiness in it. That it wasn't going to pan out. It wasn't going to be fulfilling even if I achieved it. And then I found Christ. So, what does that passage mean? It means that my circumstances have nothing to do with whether I am satisfied or not. That is dependent on my walk and my relationship with Jesus Christ. And Paul said, I've learned. Oh, he was the highest of the high in the Pharisees. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. He was no doubt going to be the leader of the Sanhedrin. And all of the things that were accrued to him in the flesh, he said, they're meaningless. They're not satisfying. But when I found Christ, I can be in a jail cell and be content. Contentment is not in circumstances. Contentment is in Christ.